The insatiable yearning for love and affection can only dwell in the human heart, because love divine is the ever-present reality. This is why every living creature responds to love. In meekness and self-abnegation, she took the irrevocable step that committed her to the conversion of her pure ideal into life, and by the divine science of love she found the truth of health, happiness, heaven. To this highest truth she remained true. She knew, quote, "The beautiful and glorious traits of humanity, toil, meekness, truthfulness, love, form the stepping stones to man's divinity, and we should clasp these jewels to the heart and never part with them. If thou hast them not, sell all thou hast and purchase them, costly as they may be. Pay the price of weary watches, privations, toil, self-denial, cross-bearing, cheerfully. Then shalt thou possess the soul in peace and power, and grasp firmly the reward of a life made glorious." Unquote. Mrs. Eddy's history was a holy one. In retrospection and introspection, she tells us, "Mere historic incidents and personal events are frivolous and of no moment unless they illustrate the ethics of truth. But if the spiritual conclusions are separated from their premises, the nexus, connection, interconnection, is lost. The human history needs to be revised and the material record expunged." When we expunge the material record sufficiently to see Mrs. Eddy's every human footstep in a new light, her human history is revised. Behind the material record, we see God as love in action. God revealing himself to humanity in the only way humanity can perceive the divine at work. Expunging the material record enables us to see her holy history behind the cruel disappointments and hardships, even as we see Jesus' holy history when we look at his life ending in desertion and crucifixion. Mary Baker Eddy, the highest visible idea. Because Mrs. Eddy has warned us that without a correct sense of its highest visible idea, we can never understand the divine principle, unquote. It is paramount that we, as Christian Scientists, realize the necessity of so protecting our thoughts that we are not unwittingly made to deprive our leader and friend of her rightful place as the revelator to this age of the Christ science, which Jesus demonstrated, and that we do not become forgetful of the price she paid to fulfill Jesus' prophecy in parable, of the leaven which a woman took and hid in 3 measures of meal till the whole was leavened. Of this parable, Mrs. Eddy asks if it doesn't point to a moral with a prophecy, namely, foretelling the second appearing in the flesh of the Christ truth. As the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, Mary Baker Eddy fulfilled every requirement that Jesus prophesied in the book of Revelation would be the sign of his second appearing. And the second appearing of Jesus is unquestionably the spiritual advent of the advancing idea of God, as in Christian Science. Unquote. It would be a great danger to our cause if Christian Scientists should fail to keep alive the memory of and gratitude for the life and sacrifices of our brave and selfless leader, who was a spiritual luminary of incomparable magnitude, above praise or criticism. There are no words that can express what the world owes Mary Baker Eddy, the window pane through which the light of truth could shine. A healing is sometimes delayed because of a misunderstanding of our leader's character, but often a great victory has been won through gaining a sincere appreciation of her service to humanity. Lynn and the Lean Years. Deserted, alone. Many have read in the current textbook that the, quote, "search for truth was sweet, calm, and buoyant with hope," unquote. And this it surely must have been. What may escape some readers is that this refers to her state of mind, as in solitude she sought the solution of this problem of mind healing. Also, it actually covers only the 3-year period, 1866 to 1869, immediately following her discovery. Even those years, when one researches the record, were overspread with what humanly would be termed privation and tribulation. Among other visitations suffered during this period, her husband, Dr. Patterson, eloped with another woman. By 1867, with the exception of one or two distant relatives, her entire family, shocked by her unorthodox views, had ostracized her. The break with them was total. They were never to be reunited on this earth. This final parting was a bitter moment for Mrs. Eddy, a moment that stretched into years, as she loved her family dearly. She now stood alone, homeless, almost penniless, moving from one Lynn or Amesbury boarding house to another, which was sometimes a raw, chilling experience. On one occasion, her trunk was put out on the porch at night, and the door barred against her. She later told a student that she sat down on her trunk, and the words for what we today have the scientific statement of being came to her. Mrs. Eddy always treated defeat as victory. She saw defeats, trials, and tribulations as the weaning process, weaning us away from reliance on matter and gently shifting us to total reliance on divine love. It was at this time she wrote the poem, Christ, My Refuge. Mrs. Eddy never saw but one enemy. That one enemy, no matter in what guise it appeared, was a belief in a power apart from God, which she called malpractice or animal magnetism. It was, no doubt, of this period in her life that she wrote in Science and Health under the marginal heading, Uses of Adversity. Would existence without personal friends be to you a blank? And continued, then the time will come when you will be solitary, left without sympathy. But this seeming vacuum is already filled with divine love. When this hour of development comes, even if you cling to a sense of personal joys, spiritual love will force you to accept what best promotes your growth. Friends will betray, and enemies will slander, until the lesson is sufficient to exalt you. For man's extremity is God's opportunity. Unquote. Thou hast set my feet in a large room, Psalms 31. Perhaps a large airport, from which we can soar upward, and no longer need stand like a lost parcel in the middle of the lounge, waiting for someone to claim us. Remember, quote, trials lift us to that dignity of soul which sustains us and finally conquers them. The ordeal refines while it chastens. Revelation and Discovery. The revelation Mrs. Eddy experienced in 1866 gave her an insight into divine truth, unveiling in a flash the divine laws of life, truth, and love. But she was still faced with the prodigious task of discovering how to communicate these divine laws to humanity. Many times before discovering science, Mrs. Eddy had healed others spontaneously. Her revelation in 1866 explained those healings. She tells us, quote, the lost chord of truth, healing as of old, I caught consciously from the divine harmony, vibrating its own sweet music. It was to me a revelation of truth, God, and science, explaining the principle of this divine harmony, enabled me to understand it and to systematize and demonstrate truth. The revelation in 1866 had come to Mrs. Eddy because her thought was prepared to receive it. In Retrospection and Introspection, page 24, she records that for many years she had been trying to trace all physical effects to a mental cause. She continues, I wandered through the dim mazes of Materia Medica till I was weary of scientific guessing. I sought knowledge from the different medical schools and from various humbugs, but without receiving satisfaction. Unquote. In the Christian Science Journal of June 1887, she wrote, As long ago as 1844, I was convinced that mortal mind produced all disease, and that the various medical theories were in no proper sense scientific. Unquote. She says it was a case of dropsy, described on page 156 of Science and Health, that was the falling apple. It convinced her beyond any doubt that mind was the controlling agent in the patient's restoration to health. Elsewhere, she says, the falling apple was her immediate recovery from that 1866 injury. In Volume 1 of the Christian Science Journal, an article by Mrs. Eddy, using the editorial She, states, She discovered the science of healing embodied in her works after years of practical proof through homeopathy that mind instead of matter is the principle of pathology, and finally sealed that proof by a severe casualty, from which she recovered through her exercise of mental power over the body, after the regular physicians had pronounced her case incurable. And from that day forth, she has toiled with pen and tongue to explain her discovery of the science of mental healing. Unquote. This experience satisfied her that the only logical conclusion is that all is mind and its manifestation. Does any Christian Scientist who accepts the scientific statement of being question that Mrs. Eddy knew eventually all humanity would arrive at this same conclusion? Does anyone doubt the time will come when the error, seen as mortal birth and death, will be understood as unreal and obsolete? What the physical senses are aware of as matter, or a physical body, must not be accepted as if it were something in itself. The mind of man is the creative principle, God. What we think we see with the eyes must be translated, because it is not really seen with the eyes, but with the understanding. The thinking of the revealing mind is called man. This mind that manifests all, that brings all to view, is your mind. It is the source and condition of all existence, and from the infinite elements of the one mind, your mind, emanates all form, color, quality, and quantity. The divinity of the human is demonstrated and becomes clear through spiritual understanding and comprehension. As we learn to look out from mind, our true mind, there will be no false evaluation. From the standpoint that all is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, the objects of sense are ideas of mind and are wholly subjective. It is our mind that is doing the seeing, and in science, mind and love are one. So the seeing is always comforting and wholly good. The self-renunciation of all that constitutes a so-called material man and the acknowledgement and achievement of his spiritual identity is science that opens the very floodgates of heaven. Divinity seen through discovery. But how can sinful mortals prove that a divine principle heals the sick, as well as governs the universe, time, space, immortality, man? It must be through discovery. Regarding discovery, Mrs. Eddy wrote, To one born of the flesh, science must be a discovery, and mortals must work for the discovery of even a portion of it. Unquote. The whole outlook of our consciousness must change from a material to a spiritual point of view in order to bring thought in line with her discovery that all is infinite mind, infinitely manifested, and to find that sin, disease, death, and discord are pure illusions that hold mankind in bondage to the belief in a matter body and a matter world. quote, spirit imparts the understanding which uplifts consciousness and leads into all truth, unquote. To the human, this may appear as an ordered process of understanding through which the student gradually grasps the whole truth, as promised in the first edition of Science and Health, namely, understanding can grasp even the infinite idea. When we are realizing divine ideas, that is truth's own self-realization. Writing of science, Mrs. Eddy says, divinely defined, science is the atmosphere of God. The atmosphere of God permeates the first edition of Science and Health. She continues her definition, humanly construed, and according to Webster, it is knowledge duly arranged and referred to general truths and principles on which it is founded and from which it is derived. It was the vision of the infinite idea that flashed into Mrs. Eddy's consciousness in 1866, a vision that, because she reduced it in writing to a science and system which all can learn, is destined to usher in the millennium. Of her experience after her discovery, she wrote, "A child drinks in the outward world through the eyes and rejoices in the draught. He is as sure of the world's existence as he is of his own, yet he cannot describe the world." Unquote. She was struggling to articulate what was coming to her from a divine source which has no words. With fierce heartbeats, she was endeavoring to clothe the spirit of science in words her fellow man could understand. The intensity of the consecrated effort she put into her task pushed all else aside, and the spirit of love flowed in to compensate her for her loss of all earth held dear. It was the situation before 1870, during that comparatively quiet span of which she wrote that the search was sweet, calm, and buoyant with hope. More trials await her. But a harsher period lay ahead. A change was coming in the ocean of events, in which there may have remained a settled calm in the depths below, but the winds and waves would rage on the surface. Even at this early date, there is ample evidence in Mrs. Eddy's writings that she foresaw the Antichrist, the red scourge that would move like a solar eclipse with its dark shadow covering the spiritual face of the earth, obstructing mankind's vision of the sacred rights of men, rights that she was striking out for, which would set man free from the basic tyranny of belief in matter as reality. For this great truth, the impulse had come upon her, she states, to endure all things while treading alone the thorny path, as she embarked on a life of ceaseless servitude to bless at all hazards them that cursed her. Because she knew she had discovered something holy, something that brought to mortals the understanding that they were not mortals, but are divine, she could not tolerate any mixing with materiality, nor could she meet evil's opposing forces with cool, detached reserve, as worldly philosophers were prone to do. Having touched the divine, having proved it beyond cavil, in healing all manner of sickness and discord, she could not allow the wickedness of a few to deter her from giving her great revelation and discovery to the world. To James Gilman, the artist for her illustrated poem Christ in Christmas, Mrs. Eddy once exclaimed, "Oh, if others could only see what I see, how they would work and strive to express nothing but the spirit of truth. Because I see these things and press them upon students greatly, this necessity of practice in obedience to truth, they often turn upon me with their darkness, thus making my burden greater and greater. For I must consequently labor and watch lest this mark my thought, and I reflect it upon them again. I have never laid down any requirements until I have first suffered up to them." Opposition, despite healings. It was inevitable that propounding this newly discovered science, which spelled death to the carnal mind, would stir opposition. at first locally, then nationally and worldwide. Mrs. Eddy watched with God, for example, took the divine mind's point of view, as the first local squalid intrigues continued and gradually wore themselves out. Patiently, she persevered in her God-ordained mission. She spontaneously performed many wonderful healings in these early days. In her memoirs, Annie Louise Robertson tells of numerous healings resulting when Mrs. Eddy spoke in Tremont Temple. She tells how others had a change of heart. Quote, "A friend, who had persistently clung to an unreasonable dislike for Mrs. Eddy, told me that as Mrs. Eddy was coming down the aisle, she, this friend, turned and looked into Mrs. Eddy's face, and her resistance melted away completely. Her eyes filled with tears, and after that she was absolutely loyal to our leader. There were many other similar experiences I heard of at the time. When Mrs. Eddy was residing in Lynn, also while she lived in Boston, one constantly heard of many cases of healing which she accomplished, and in every one that I heard about the healings was instantaneous. A well-known case was the healing of a man who had been deaf and dumb. For many years afterwards, this man was at the Mother Church services and often gave testimonies. There is no doubt that much of Mrs. Eddy's healing work has never been recorded." Abigail Dyer Thompson, who had been wonderfully healed early in her career in Christian Science, reports the following conversation with Mrs. Eddy. "At one time, when our leader was talking with me of the importance of more and better healing work in our movement, she asked if I had been careful to keep a record of my own cases of healing for future reference. I said it had never occurred to me to take any particular note of them. To this, Mrs. Eddy replied with earnestness, as near as I can recall her words, 'You should, dear, be faithful to keep an exact record of your demonstrations, for you never know when they might prove of value to the cause in meeting attacks on Christian Science.' Then she added sadly, 'I regret to say that in the rush of a crowded life, it is easy to forget even important experiences, and I am sorry that this has been true of much of my best healing work. Dear blessed helper of the whole world,' little did she realize that at that very moment she was talking to one who owed years of abounding health to the skill of her own healing demonstrations. As I look back to many inspiring interviews with our beloved leader, I cherish them as the most exalted moments of my life. She spoke of spiritual things with an intimacy that revealed her vision vividly to one's consciousness, leaving a deep and lasting impression that was not unlike what the disciples must have felt on the Mount of Transfiguration." This is from a letter in the Alice Orgain Library. Blessedness from sorrow. God could work through Mrs. Eddy because of her willingness to take up the cross and leave all else. While we are in the flesh, we must strive for spirituality. A cherished volume in Mrs. Eddy's library showed the following sentiments heavily underlined. "He who is resolved to suffer and die for God cannot be vanquished. Moral resistance knows no chances, no risks. It is linked to an immortal principle and destined to certain triumph." An early writer said of Mrs. Eddy, "Of the heavenly gifts bestowed upon mortals, Mrs. Eddy considered fellowship with Christ in his suffering the most weighty trust and highest honor." Unquote. God was being glorified through her who restored hope to the hopeless, strength to the stricken ones. Loss is spiritual gain. Writing of the foundation work following her discovery, Mrs. Eddy says, "The loss of material objects of affection sunders the dominant ties of earth and points to heaven. As the ties of sense weaken, the more enduring ties of soul strengthen." And in the early 1870s she wrote, "Love is not thus lost, but far nearer as we approach God who is love. All that is truth and its idea is immortal. But mortality is not imagination, nor is it to be sneered at. Rather, it is to be understood, so that it may be destroyed, even as Jesus gave example by bringing to light immortality. Unquote. A student in an early class recorded that in her instruction, Mrs. Eddy made Christianity appear as, quote, a thing of daily love and devotion to suffering humanity, unquote. She always gave her students the divine point of view and its practical application in daily life. To the students, it seemed the whole creation was moving toward a far-off event, absolute perfection. To Mrs. Eddy, this perfection was reality, a present, accomplished fact. Just as in mathematics, everything that will ever be in the so-called future is present now. When, through spiritual education, we change from a material to a spiritual point of view, we will comprehend ourselves as God beings to whom all things are known. Character regeneration, the goal. This change comes about through spiritual assimilation of God's science. God wrote the textbook, Mrs. Eddy tells us. Study it. Let God speak to you. Again, she states, the human self must be evangelized. This results in the character regeneration that makes us godlike, that is, makes us mind-like, spirit-like, soul-like, principle-like, life-like, truth-like, and love-like. In order to be one with God, our consciousness must be godlike. For only like can commune with like. The structure of our consciousness must become, for example, must be seen as one with the structure of reality. This means toiling for the spiritually indispensable. The spiritually indispensable, Mrs. Eddy says, is the good in being and is our daily bread. Therefore, the highest spiritual Christianity in individual lives is indispensable to the acquiring of greater spiritual power. Mrs. Eddy saw evil only as error that demanded correction. In the realm of truth, evil is powerless, but in the human situation, it seems to have as much power as belief gives it, just as any error in any subject has power to produce wrong results, so long as that error remains hidden and uncorrected. She taught that old habits of thought must be corrected. The hostility to truth of the human mind, committed as it is to its own world of material appearances, must yield. To close the gap between the students' old beliefs and the new spiritual universe she opened to them required mental discipline, energy, and persistence, which many of the later students did bring to the study and practice. But these qualities were not readily forthcoming in the early students. Many of them, for the most part, as she explained to them, were starting with wrong motives. They were mainly interested in quick results and how they could earn a living or make money with her healing method, whereas Mrs. Eddy's whole life and example flowed out of unselfed love. The whole proposition of Christian Science was generally regarded as an insane notion. Putney Bancroft, an early student, tells us in his book. The MDs pronounced her a swindler, the spiritualists a medium, the church as in league with the devil. A century or two earlier, she would probably have been burned as a witch, so strong was public opinion against her. She was burned in effigy in the Boston Square, and subjected to other similar indignities. But love and sympathy for humanity endowed Mrs. Eddy with the wisdom, courage, and patient perseverance to meet the cruel hostility which her teaching aroused. Her love for her students. Mrs. Eddy herself set the example of true motherhood. She realized she could not be detached and still be effective. Tirelessly, she mothered her pupils. No matter how busy and pressed for a time, she never failed to lend a willing ear, an understanding heart, a helping hand. The records left by students reveal she never neglected an opportunity to show her love and friendship. A beautiful spirit of humility characterized Mrs. Eddy's dealings with these early pupils. As she strove to emulate the loving patience of Jesus, she saw that great humility and charity were necessary. There is something in humility which strangely exalts the heart, said St. Augustine. From his debtor's prison, John Bunyan proclaimed humility to be the most indestructible thing. Quote, "He that is down, he that has laid down the mortal sense of himself, need fear no fall. He that is low, no pride. Pride is the death's head at the feast of love. All sense of a selfhood apart from infinite good must be brought low." Mrs. Eddy wrote that humility is the stepping stone to higher recognition of deity. The mounting sense gathers fresh forms and strange fire from the ashes of dissolving self and drops the world. She found humility to be the door, the first step in Christian Science. In time, mankind will acknowledge that her holy humility, her unworldliness, and self-abandonment ushered in a new thought model that is destined to establish the kingdom of heaven on earth.